welcome to this week's edition of Focus Fridays here on your hometown radio 95.3 WKLM. Focus Fridays is brought to you by
Hobrins Insurance, Home Siding, Rhodey's IGA, Millersburg Electric, Pomerine Hospital, MRV Siding, and Millersburg Tire.
I am Melissa Patrick with Focus Fridays here on WKLM, and joining with me today is the president of the Kilbuck Valley Museum, Bob Porter. Thanks, Bob, for joining with me today here to talk about your role at the Kilbuck Valley Museum and just about the museum itself. It's one of those hidden treasures of Holmes County that more people need to know about.
Correct, and I appreciate being here, and as we have worked together many times before, especially during Share Christmas and so on like that, but yeah, the museum, the Kilbuck Museum, is really what we call the hidden gem. I mean, it is. The problem is, as we all know, nobody comes to Kilbuck, you know, and the tourists that come here, they're not really interested in going to a museum.
But they should be.
Well, you know, that
because you got cool stuff.
If they had, you know, if they had some kids, yeah, I mean, well, even adults. I mean, what we have is really incredible when you look at it, the scale of different museums in the area. They're all in their own areas and so on. Ours is the history of Kilbuck and Holmes County and the other counties surrounding. Yes.
Yeah. And a lot of times you think of a museum in a small town, you think it's just going to be their local history.
Yeah.
And you can learn so much more at the Kilbuck Museum than just, you can learn about Kilbuck,
well,
but there's more.
Yeah, when I get somebody outside, or if I give it a tour, you know, or whatever, and they'll come there, they usually know a little bit about it, but some people don't know anything, and I tell them right off the bat, I know what you're thinking, there can only be one room. What could Kilbuck have as a museum? It can only be one room. And it turns out that, like, there are six rooms.
And then
it
just keeps going.
And it just goes. And there's something for really everybody in that museum.
And I think that pretty much every time you go in, something different is going to catch your eye. There's always something. It may be the same setup. You may go in there five times in a year, but your eye is going to catch something different because you have that much of a different set of things to look at.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's amazing what we, it really is amazing what we have in there. That,
and we're not spitting this out to try to get people down there. It really is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
I was flabbergasted the first time I went in there.
You know, when you have those rooms, the last room obviously is the room where the birds are, you know, I have taken two tours in there recently of Amish gentlemen who were students of this Clarence Zimmer. And it was amazing. I mean, we were in there for a couple hours. They just, you know, they saw everything else.
Right.
But they just sat in that room and looked at stuff and so on. And it was pretty amazing.
Well, especially being students of his.
Yeah,
I mean,
understanding
how he worked and what he did.
They came from all over the county and out of the county. They got together as a group and came down. And that was twice. And that was two different groups. And so, yeah, I'll take groups through, you know. It can be large or small. It doesn't matter to me. If I have the time and we set it up, I'd be glad to take school groups through. I've had a lot of homeschool groups to go through.
And more young people need to learn their local history.
Oh, yeah.
And they're not learning it. Yeah. And having a place like this where they can go is awesome.
Yeah.
And they should take advantage of it.
I wish they would, yeah. No, I mean, we have really, over the last couple of years, really have gotten a lot of people coming through. But it is, I hate to say this, but it is a little frustrating sometimes when I'm there or one of our museum members is there, and you're there from, let's say, 12 o'clock to 4 o'clock, and nobody comes. And when that gets, you know. And I understand.
We occasionally get that at the Victorian House, too.
Yeah,
I've volunteered
I'm
there
sure.
And had, like, nobody or one person the whole time.
But you gotta stay at it. So if you've never been there, you need to come, and that's all there is to it. You need to come, and we're going to probably talk about what we have in there.
And go from there. You guys are going to be opening for this season here in a couple weeks.
Yes, a couple weeks, ready to go.
First, it's Saturdays and Sundays starting in April.
Correct. 1 to 4.
But, like, if you have a school group or something, they can reach out to you.
Oh, yeah.
And set it up for any time.
Anytime, sure, yeah. Well,
if you're available, you'll show them around.
You bet.
And it's cool to go in and look by yourself, but it's even cooler if somebody's there and has the time that knows about the stuff to explain it. Because there's so much more to the story than what you see.
I'm an old history teacher, remember. I have to laugh because I'll get these groups come in there, and like that Amish group, and there might be 15 or 20 of them, and the first thing I say to them, now I'm telling you, I'm an old history teacher, and I'm going to move you. We're going to go through these rooms, and then you can come back and see whatever you want. But until we get to the end of where we're going, I'm moving you through here, okay? Because you have to do that, and then they have as much time to go where, for an ordinary group that comes in, each one of them may have a different room that they're interested in and want to get back and see what that is, you know, and spend more time there. But they got to see the whole thing, you know?
Yeah, I was lucky Scott was working the first time I went in, and there was nobody else there, and so he got to explain the eggs in the shelf and the bird and everything. And
I have to tell you this is a great one, though. You know, the conservatory bought the swamp. We don't call it swamp now, we call it wetlands now.
Correct.
But they bought all that. So they've, two or three groups have gone through, I've taken them through. So as soon as I get to the room where the mill is and we come out of that, I look at them and say, you are not going to like this next room. You will not like this next room. And it's the, you know, it's the birds and so on like that. And so we take them in. When I take them in there, then they go, oh, my God, you know, they're walking around looking at things. And then I say, if you didn't like this, you will not like this one. And I open up the egg, you know, just to get their things. But, you know, they all do recognize even then that that's history right there. All that would have been lost, you know?
Exactly.
And a lot of those birds that are in there, there are 54 owls in there, okay? And somebody gets really upset about that. But my answer as we're talking here is back in 19—these were done from 1921 to 1926.
And so they are not fresh birds.
No. But, you know, look, they still look great.
You would never be able to tell.
And what I tell them is you have to understand that back in 1921 and 1926, there was no laws.
None.
And in Holmes County, there was only two real businesses, farming. and the chief product of those was, you know, would have been chickens, chicks, and sheep, lambs, and that was the number one target for these owls that I have in there. And not I say 54 owls or whatever, there's more hawks in there than that.
Right.
So, you know, back then the farmers were probably very happy to see this happen. And yes, it's you know, a lot of people will shiver about that, but it is history, and there are birds there that you're not going to see anymore.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. These are birds that you're not going to be able to just walk out your back door and see.
No.
And it gives you probably the only opportunity
and
to
close.
See it up close.
Up close.
You
and
just
they
can't
still
pet
look
it.
Good. They still look good. You know, you think about it, all those years, 100 and some years, and the ones like the red-headed woodpecker, you know, the Baltimore Orioles and so on, they're the red is starting to fade, you know, you can see that. But the rest, but the rest of it. Now, the other thing about it is I always stop people when they go in there, because I have cleaned the wind, all the windows outside of these cases are clean. They're just not cleaned on the inside. They're not bad, but they're not clean.
Because you can't open them.
I can get in there, and I have got in and cleaned one little spot right at the beginning, because I tell these people, you know, when they come in there, now, look, if you look up there, you can see that it is dirty inside those windows, and we could clean them, but I'd have to take all the birds out, which are all extremely delicate, and then get in there and clean the wings. But the other thing is they're all stuffed with an arsenic-based compound that was used in the 1920s.
They and had so no rules back
we,
then.
We ain't messing with that. So,
yeah, no. Yeah. They're going to stay right there.
They stay there. So, yeah, I have a lot of fun when I do this and take people around. But, you know, there's so much there. I don't know where all to go. We can start. One of the guys I'd like to talk a little bit about is Dave Grove. You know, Dave Grove is he's not a scientist as such. I call him my rockologist. And that's exactly what he does. He goes, you know, he's a retired lineman for United Telephone, and he goes all over this country collecting rocks and this and that. And he has brought in samples and put up displays in there that are just beautiful, gorgeous. And that has really been an attraction this year. I'm really grateful that we got him on there.
For sure. Well, we'll talk more about what's in the museum and how you got involved here. And as we move forward, that is Bob Porter, the president of the Cobuk Valley Museum. I'm Melissa Patrick for Focus Fridays on WKLM. Returning here with Bob Porter, the president of the Kilbuck Valley Museum, I'm Melissa Patrick for WKLM, and we got so deep in talking about the amazingness of the museum, we didn't get to the simple question of how'd you get involved with the Kilbuck Valley Museum?
Well, I'll tell you what, I just became a couple of years as a teacher at West Holmes teaching American history, and I got invited down to a meeting of the museum. I didn't know anything much about it or anything like that. And I think Garrett Roach was the president at that time. And so I got on there, and I remember sitting there with these other people when they started talking about making payments on the museum, the loan they had. It seemed like every member was making a payment on it. And I thought, what did I get myself into here? But that got taken care of by a great donation, and the building was bought. I just was a member, and then I think Helen Smith was the president at that point. And then when she left, and I can't even tell you how long ago that was. Seriously, I don't have that good of a memory on it. I became the president chairman. My right-hand man at that time was Dave Reed, who was really our curator.
Okay.
And he had passed away here a few years ago, and that was really a really crushing blow to the museum and to me. He was such a great guy. So, yeah, I just been in it ever since, and I got, I don't want to say elected. I don't think you get elected at anything.
You got voluntold.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I've been that way ever since. I love it, really. I don't know what the future is going to be for this place. I have great board of directors. We always need new volunteers to be in the museum during when we're open. A lot of people are afraid of that, but somebody's going to ask them a question they can't answer.
And it's okay.
And yeah, it's okay. My phone number's right there on the door. They can the desk, and they can call me at any time. I'm really needing, you know, it's the same group I've had for I don't know how many years, and I need to get some new blood in there.
And younger.
Younger,
We have the same with the Historical Society. There, I see all these kids who like, oh, I love history. Get involved. We've got amazing museums here in this county. And to, you know, get them involved.
It's tough. Yeah.
It is.
And there's so much on these kids, too, today.
Exactly.
All different things that they you know, I understand that. So if there's anybody out there who's willing to do this, I'll show you how to do it. And
volunteer
there'll
time.
Always be somebody there. Yeah, it's
easy. And
you
easy. Meet cool people.
Yeah.
And
well, you can read a good book. Yeah, so, you know, if you have to. I mean, it just depends. But we're always interested in that. So I've been there. Most of my board members have been with me for quite a while. And they're a great bunch of people. And we'll talk about them, I think, a little bit or whatever. But that's how I got into it, okay? Yeah, the founding of it, you know, was Dr. Nigel Brush. Mm-hmm. And he, which is interesting because he was the lead archaeologist in the digging up of the mastodon bones that we have. And then he, as a professor, was busy working and so on.
Right.
So he was kind of off. He come, he kept some of the stuff there for digs and stuff like that, but he didn't have much at that point to do with the museum. He's now retired, mm-hmm. and he's now getting back into the museum with us. I mean, we've
Which
done some
great.
Programs, a couple programs mm-hmm. with him, and I expect to do more. I know Torian House is we're doing one. We're sharing at the Kilbuck Theater mm-hmm. on the
Duncan Theater, the original, June 25th.
Yeah, and so you know we're trying to help them out. You know, it's a young couple that have the theater, and we've had two things there, and mm-hmm. We don't ask for money, we ask for donations to the theater, and they mm-hmm. they've done well with that.
Yes,
and and I always tell everybody, you know, where else can you go and have a lecture and sit in nice seats and have popcorn?
Right, and the popcorn's delicious.
So. Just, you know, throw a few bucks in there, and they do. So, you know, everybody's trying. The thing is, it's really tough now in getting in Kilbuck. The store's closed now.
But there's just so much positive getting ready to come to Kilbuck with the streetscape.
That's that new thing coming down, and it's going to come right in front of our museum.
And
I haven't heard yet whether it's going to do anything with my porch or whatever yet. But they... It's because originally it was going to go the other way, come down mm-hmm. around and go on the one side where the post office is, but then mm-hmm. there's no place to park there for the post office. So they're coming across to us. That should, you know, I talk to these guys all the time up there. And like I said, I've taken a group of mm-hmm. them through a number of times. You know, get something over there where your birders can come down and they'll come by the droves.
The birding is huge.
Absolutely. And so I'm looking now whether they come in the museum or not, it's a different story, but they'll come down. We'll get traffic.
Oh, they know there's birds there.
Yeah. Well,
you got birds.
Yeah, I'll have to check their firearms at the door though. Yeah, that's all I need. So I've been there and I don't know when I'll get out, if I get out, or what. I don't know.
You're there for always, Bob.
I don't, yeah, well, what's always, you know? I'm kind of getting up there, you know? And it's, like I said, I have a good group of people, and we're always interested in more, but we need, we need some people to volunteer.
So who are your board of directors?
Well, my board of directors is real simple. I have the secretary and the treasurer. Let's do the treasurer. The treasurer is Bobby Wilson.
Okay.
She's Bobby, you know, the Wilson family's down there. And then I have Dave Groves, our what I call our rockologist. Mm-hmm. We have him down there. And we have Carrie Elvey as our biologist as such. You know, she knows all kinds of stuff like that. Linda Fournette is our person who does all the newsletters and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And she's the one that does all the stuff for the Share Christmas, too. She's okay. Got double duty with me and so on.
It's usually how it works in a small town.
Yeah. Kathy Klein, Len Jors is there. Owen Miller has just passed away, unfortunately, but he was always there to help.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a good guy. Dan and Deb Stadler are on our board. Linda Wilcox. And mm-hmm. so there are, so that's about what we have.
So, you know, like all the birds you have, you have probably just as many rocks thanks to...
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. We picked up a young man, Scott Miller, who's mm-hmm. at the high school. Now he's...
used to be here at WKLM.
Yeah, and he was, you know, he's in big time in track and running and stuff mm-hmm. like that. So he's one of the younger ones, I guess. And I don't know how old he is, but he's one of the younger ones.
We're not going to discuss Scott's age.
Yeah. And then, of course, Dave Reed was our curator mm-hmm. who's gone now. And that, like I said, is a big loss to us. But so, you know, we're always looking for somebody that wants to get, especially young people that want to get involved in this thing. And it's really hard to get somebody.
It is. Yeah. I'm one of the youngest people with the County Historical Society,
yeah.
and I'm not a spring chicken anymore.
Yeah, I understand.
So
I'm making no comments on that. But talk about me, I won't talk about you.
But so. it's a good time to help learn your area history and mm-hmm. everything, and a great way to share it.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of responsibility, but there's a lot of reward. Because like I said, with the volunteering I've done, I've met so many neat people.
Mm-hmm.
And it just gives an opportunity to share the history. And if you love your county's history, or your town's history, It's a great way to share that.
Yeah, and speaking of history, you know, we had early American days, and this early American days, we had the greatest weather. I mean, it was beautiful and perfect. No bees. I mean, it was really good. And we had over 850 people go through that thing on 2 days.
That's awesome.
It is amazing. And it just, you know, when they get in, they come out and they just go, hey, I can't believe what you got, you know. And
I think that is a common phrase coming out of that museum.
It is, and I'm sure we'll talk about what we got.
So. Yeah, I think my favorite thing is the face stone. That will always be my favorite.
I always kid people with that. I ask them what they think. And what we're talking about is the face in the stone that was found on 35. Right?
And it's like, it's 3 feet high wide.
Yeah, and it's carved.
And if you ever get rid of it, it'll come to my house.
Well, it's kind of one of our calling cards.
And, it is.
And I won't say a whole lot about it, except that I always ask people when they're looking at it, who do you think did this? I mean, what's the face look like? And I'll get everything and it does look Chinese or baby or this or that. I don't know what you thought it looked like. But I always tell when I get done, you know, right before I'm ready to move them into the next room, that I know who did it. And I tell them at that point, aliens. And I said that... That brings more people into the museum, and we move on, you know. So I don't know.
Well, nobody knows. It's a mystery.
I've had two archaeologists look at it, and neither one of them could say anything for sure. I've had a woman look at it and tell me her 10-year-old son did this years ago, and I just kind of smiled. You know, so you just don't know, but it's there, and it's really it's like our calling card.
It's cool.
Yeah.
So we'll talk more about what's inside here as we move forward. That's Bob Porter, the president of the Kibbuck Valley Museum. I'm Melissa Patrick for Focus Fridays on WKLM. Back again with Bob Porter, the president of the Kibbuck Valley Museum. I'm Melissa Patrick for Focus Fridays on WKLM. And we've dropped little hints and little bugs on what's in the museum there. And just walking in the front is an experience. You're not just walking into a lobby.
No, we try to do some. One of the things that we try to do every year is to do a different project. And this year, our project was the Kibbuck Bank, because they're having their anniversary and so on like that. So we had a display in there full of all kinds of memorabilia from Kibbuck. The Kibbuck Bank. I mean, it was just overwhelming in there how much stuff was there. And also, the year before, we had done Kibbuck as a birthday. And so we, on the wall throughout that, and it's still there, are the timeline of Kibbuck from 1874 on to present. And that's kind of good. In the past, my favorite one was the flood.
Yeah.
What we did was we went down, as anybody who from Kibbuck knows, that the fire department, if you look to the right of the door of the fire department, you'll see a crest of Ohio. And that's the height of the flood, the 69 flood at that point. And so we GPS'd everything going down and up the street, and we put white poles on the corner of each street of the height, and you could be right there in the center, the intersection, which you can kind of do in Kibbuck, in the intersection
occasionally,
and look left and right, and you can see the height of the water in 69 as
and
it was.
And we're not talking ankle deep.
No, oh God, no.
It was
up there. Well, the fire department lost everything. They lost all their equipment. You know, there were homes.
A lot of people lost everything.
You know, lost a couple lives. We have all kinds of newspapers and memorabilia on that. I mean, down...
hugely documented.
When you go down to where you would turn on 60, you go up 60 towards West Holmes and so on, it was 11 feet high there. And that's not at the water level, that's at the land level. I mean, they're just... As I tell everybody, in 1960, when they built the bypass, which was a killer to Kibbuck. Any bypass is a killer to a town. And when they built that, they built it, and you have to build it up. And there was only one way for water to get out of Kibbuck, and that still today is the bridge down there on 60, as you would where 520 comes. And that got all jammed. And then the bypass acted as a dam, and all the water came back, and all the water came in, and before...
And there was just so much water.
I'll tell you what, it was up to the ceilings in their homes before they could probably move a chair. I mean, it was that bad. And now that's the fourth or fifth since 1913, and everybody's mm-hmm. expecting to have another one. That's what I'm hearing. I don't know. Never got in the museum. It got right up. We are the highest point in the town. It got right up, I guess. Now, the museum was not there.
Right.
It was Shriner Soul, but it got right up to all the steps, but it did not get in, okay? But other than that, down you go 300 yards either way, and boom. I mean, it was a disaster.
And you guys have lots of information on that there. And
all kinds of stuff on that.
The book that goes along with it.
Correct.
And you guys, there's lots of things you can check out. Because we've talked about there's rocks and birds and eggs. But you guys also have a very extensive display on Kilbuck's history itself and different things that Kilbuck has had, and that's important.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize all the cool things that Kilbuck has had in its history.
It's there. We got it. Yeah. For the most part, I go back to that room and I just look at some of those newspapers and I just think, my gosh.
Well, and for somebody who lived through that, I was not around yet for the 69 flood, but I heard the stories from my mom and my uncles, and they were Wayne County, but Wayne County got hit,
they
too.
They got hit, too.
They were
that's
in
where,
the Downton
area. That's where all the water came from, Wayne County.
Yeah.
So, and I was just, that's 69, so I was just graduating from college at that point, and I think I was in Mount Vernon at that point, and had just signed up to go to teach at West Holmes, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't up there when this occurred, but that's a long time ago, but...
But it's history.
It is.
It's interesting to learn about and and remember.
Yeah.
Because like you said, they're predicting there could be another one. And what better way to know how to handle it than to see what happened before?
Correct. We'll see.
There's a lot more mitigation now and things that are done to try to help prevent that.
It was cleared out, but there's still junk in there.
But when you have that much water, there's nothing you can do.
No. Yeah.
Water does what water wants.
That's correct. It did. Yeah.
Exactly.
So.
And so there's lots of that to see. And, we're obviously not going to say everything that's in the museum because we want people to see the neat things. But you can look back. What you do have is a lot of, like, the annuals or yearbooks.
Correct.
As we call them, that people can go through and check out and look for maybe mom or dad or
relatives. We got stacks of them, really, from Kilbuck.
Yes, from Kilbuck.
Yeah.
But it's, for somebody maybe who grew up in the area, it's like a little time capsule when you walk into that room.
I get calls all the time about that, but I'm not a Kilbuck boy, so it's really hard for me to say to them, I know what you're talking about. But we do push them on to the genealogical society and so on like that. And then there are people down there that have been there. We'll get them to notify these people and talk to them. And then, of course, the yearbooks and stuff.
And that's the nice thing you mentioned, getting the genealogical society involved. While we all have all these neat little museums in the county and we each have our own little niche, we all are willing to work together and share and help people really get a full view of the history of our home county. People don't think Holmes County has an interesting history, but it's there. There is so much there that's interesting.
We work with the Victorian House quite a bit with Mark Morley. Mark was one of my former students, a long time ago. And he does such a terrific job there. I don't know what they'll do when he retires. And County Line, even though it's there in Shreve, it's got a great museum.
It's another little hidden museum.
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what, it's there for people to, it's got everything in it. So, it's just, there's so many of them like this around. And
Your museum down there is a great thing. You go when you first open and just spend hours. Take the kids down.
You can do
take them. Sure. You can. I think I spent 2 hours in there at least the first time I went in.
It, you know, it all depends on what you really like. You know, my specialty in that museum is the first real big room, which is the Indian artifacts. I've been collecting since I was 8 years old. Collected them and baseball cards. My mom threw away the baseball cards, but she didn't throw away my arrowheads.
Good.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And we have, I have collected over the years. I have quite a collection myself and my children. Mm-hmm. My sons all hunt, and my grandsons mm-hmm. all hunt and on our land. And we still find things. Mm-hmm. We don't find the big pieces anymore. Big pieces are no longer out there because of the plows and stuff like that. But the smaller points you'll be able to find. And so we have fun doing that. But what we have in that museum is incredible. And I can't even get it all out.
Right. I mean, you got to rotate stuff.
Yeah. And then with the advent of what we have bought, the mastodon, you know, we have the mastodon bones that were excavated in the 90s by Nigel and so on and his group of things. We have that there. We've always had that. But now we have purchased, through Nigel's mm-hmm. help, the collection of Ashland University's geology department of mastodon bones. We paid a nice little piece price for it, but
it really helps build the exhibit.
Oh, gosh, yes. I mean, we have mastodon teeth. We have skulls, which are reproduction skulls, because mm-hmm. you can't get them. But we have bones, and we have all kinds of stuff in there. And I always tell everybody, you want to see mastodon bones? Either go to the Cleveland Museum of Natural History or come to Kilbuck. I mean, give me a break.
Who would ever expect to come to be like somebody say, well, go to Kilbuck if you want to see a mastodon bone.
Exactly. So we have whole sets of them now, and he's got the things all set up. And it looks really good, and had to take a couple of displays of Indian artifacts down for him to put stuff up. I'm moving them over to another case.
We'll just need to build you a second level.
No. 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 Shame on you. I mean, it's just the Indian artifacts that we have. A lot of people think, first of all, that if you find an arrowhead out in the field or so on, or grandma gave you an arrowhead, that's the Indians that we know of here, you know, the historic Indians, the Delaware, the Shawnee, Wyandots.
Not always.
And they weren't, really, yeah. Most of these points are between 8,000, 9,000, 10,000, and some of them even farther back now than that, years old. I mean, that's amazing. I always tell everybody, when I give them the tour, if you would find one in the ground and you pick that up, it's probably the first time somebody's touched that in 10,000 years. Mm-hmm. And that's almost, you know, that's hard
cool.
to believe, but that's that's it.
It's cool.
And so, yeah, so, and there's a big argument on when the first Americans came here. You can't really call them, Americans. You can't call them Europeans. You can't, you know, it's really, you can't call them just Indians because they certainly aren't Indians. Columbus kind of screwed that one up. You can't, I mean, so, you know, what do you call these people? And you have to call them natives, I guess. Because they're not, you know, they came from the ice bridge that came over, and they came all the way down. And that's the big theory we were talking about before, the Clovis. Most people, archaeologists say, now that's changing now a little bit, that these first people that came were the Clovis people, and they came all the way down. And I tell everybody, where does the word Clovis get its, where's Clovis come from? And it's in New Mexico. Are you telling me that that's the first place they found points? I mean, they have been here and through here and on down. And I mean, we just don't know the thousands of years, how many people have come across there. But what their real names are, the American natives.
Well, anyway. We'll take a little pause here. This is a great place for a break. That is the president of the Kilbuck Valley Museum, Bob Porter. I'm Melissa Patrick for Focus Fridays on WKLM. We're going to get more into the Kilbuck Valley Museum with President Bob Porter. I am Melissa Patrick with Focus Fridays here on WKLM. And you're kind of getting a little vocal preview tour of the museum here, essentially. and we're giving you all that cool stuff that you're like, man, I need to go see that. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that kind of got my attention in there is your rocks and your minerals. You said you have your rock guy that's helped you get absolutely. A lot of those.
Yeah.
And it's really cool. Like there's a lot. Is. There's some that glow and everything.
Yeah, I tell you what, he has brought in, even in the front room, he has put up a display this last year of these minerals, these gorgeous, they're just, you know, quartz and different colors and stuff, just beautiful, you mm-hmm. know. But the third room in there really is
the gem
is the so the third room after you get done with the Indian artifacts and different items that were brought up by mm-hmm. this gentleman from Mexico and so on is the Joy Hintz room. Joy Hintz was a professor at Heidelberg University. And when she passed away, she donated her entire collection of minerals and to the museum. Unbelievable. I'm not sure how that happened.
I was going to say, was she from the area?
No,
or?
No, they're North Carolina. I mean, how she knew about it or whatever.
It was meant to be.
I'm sure there's a connection, but I don't know what it is. And it is unbelievable. I mean, it's got, you name it, we got it.
There are so many in there.
And
there's raw and polished and
everything. And she has two children. They're both archaeologists in North Carolina.
Nice.
And they come back every year. And I had a great story on the boy because every time he comes back, he stops at the door and he looks down the thing and there's this great big purple, and I'm not an archaeologist or whatever, quartz thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he laughs because every year when school is out, she threw them in the car and drives to Mexico. And mm-hmm. you can do that then. You can't do it today. And they spent a couple months in Mexico picking up rocks. That's where she got her collections and such. And he's the one who found that quartz thing and had to carry it in 100-degree temperature, carried it about a mile and a half back to the car in 100-degree temperature, you know?
Yes.
And then Dave Grove built this one box thing where the kids love it, that with a black light.
You turn it on.
Some of these things that were at the bottom of the ocean hadn't kept their colors and so mm-hmm. on, the different colors on the... I mean, I have to clean the glass every time.
It's a glow under the black
light.
They just
love it, yeah.
And, I'm an adult, and I thought it was cool.
Yeah, okay, there you go. I do too, to tell you the truth. So that's in there, and then you just walk around the whole thing. The whole room is full of this, of these items and stuff that are just, you know, unbelievable. And
it's just an amazing.
Yeah, I mean, you could spend forever to look at. I mean, everything that's in that thing, and then. Then you go into the next room, and that's our general room where we have the stuff on the mm-hmm. flood and so on. And right now we have the, 1964 was the last year of the school district in Holmes mm-hmm. County, western part of the county of individual schools. Kilbuck had their own high school, middle mm-hmm. school, elementary, Nashville, Lakeville, Big Prairie.
There were tons of schools in this county.
Right.
And they slowly started consolidating. Like a few would consolidate here, a few here, a few here, till we ended up with our two districts.
Right. And in the western part, you know, they might graduate five kids. They might graduate mm-hmm. 10, 15. You never know, but what is interesting to me is that they were in a league, you know, a basketball, mm-hmm. football league with mm-hmm. each other. So you had Lakeville, you know, and Nashville and Millersburg with the Spartans. They were green. Mm-hmm. Kilbuck was the Bucks, and they were, they hated each other. I mean, they played.
The rivals.
I mean, you know, yeah. And remember that the basketball courts in those days were about a third of what they are, seem like today. You know, you mm-hmm. could today. You could go to that one of those old schools and shoot a jump shot from half court, you know. But in 1965, that's the first year of the school. Now, I wasn't there, but there was a lot of issues, you know, with not kids. Kids you never had a problem with. It was always the parents, you know.
Because
Yeah, boy, the parents, you know, you're not playing this kid because he's from Nashville or so on like that. And most of the coaches at that point were from, weren't from there. We could care less. I know I came in 69 and I coached basketball, track, and football, and it was the same way. I mean, not as bad, but, you know, that you had the rumblings that this kid should be playing instead of this kid. That's all gone today, obviously. And but I have we have the Kilbuck, a lot of the Kilbuck school stuff up there, the majorette uniform that she's still around, Bevington, and just different things that we have, football in there, down marker, which is just a bunch of stuff. Plus, we have the paperwork on the flood, and then we have a railroad section too over there. Mm-hmm. But the railroad, the flood is where the newspapers is, where people today can really see pictures of what it was
the
like back there. Yes,
pure devastation.
Absolutely. You think about this water rising as high as it did,
and moving,
and then think about the theater, because when you water goes into the theater, it goes down.
Mm-hmm.
And the store, the Kilbuck IGA that was over there, was up to the third shelf there. And, you know, the devastation. And I always tell people when they come through, really, and I told the Amish this when they came through, the savior really was the Amish. They came in here by the hundreds and didn't ask for anything and hauled buckets of mud out of the different stores and stuff in different homes. So, yeah, it was a pretty really shocking thing. And we're talking back in the 60s, so you weren't, you know, everybody's getting shots. They had to get shots for this, that, and everything else. The doctors were here, and of course,
and back then you didn't have the communication that we have now, so you couldn't put out the warnings like we get
today. I don't think
there,
as far as
I don't think there were any.
They didn't have a warning.
It just
came.
It came, and it came fast, and it came hard.
Yeah,
and
exactly,
there was no time.
No. I mean, they didn't have time to, like I said, to move chairs, to get them upstairs or anything. And you can go down that street and you can look at some of these houses and see that it was right up to there.
And anybody who lived with it has a story to tell.
Everyone does, yeah.
We should document all those.
We've got
more to talk about the Kilbuck Valley Museum with President Bob Porter. I'm Melissa Patrick with Focus Fridays here on WKLM. We're going to continue our vocal tour of the Kilbuck Valley Museum with Bob Porter, who's the president for the Kilbuck Valley Museum. I'm Melissa Patrick for Focus Fridays on WKLM. And there were some really important, well-known businesses come out of Kilbuck. And you guys have a little room dedicated that kind of shows the history of one of them.
Especially, and you know, as we talk about what we have, and I describe some of that, it's not as good as being there to see this. You know, you got
to
come and see.
This is to trigger you to want to go see. Yeah. Be like, what are they talking about? Yeah, you got to see it. We can't even describe the awesomeness.
No. Well, the one room we have is the Duncan Mill, and that was the mill that was burned down in 1961 on purpose, because it was just not being used at that point. It's where the parking lot is, right next to, again, to the building that's where the theater was in upstairs.
The original Duncan.
You know, it produced a flower called White Lily Flower.
Which I had actually heard of when I did time at Smucker's.
Yeah.
And didn't even realize that it had its origins down here till I went through the museum. I'm like, I've heard of that flower.
Well, we have pictures of the mill. We have pictures of the beginning, at the end, you know. And I always send, when I get done with people, I always send them over across the bridge, you know, towards 520 to turning left and get back on 62, wherever they're going. But I always tell them, when you go across the bridge, you can stop. You stop on the bridge and you look to your right, and you'll see where the dam used to be for the thing. And I tell everybody that, don't worry about it. You can stop on this bridge in Kilbuck, okay? It's not that you're going to get killed there. But this mill was quite large. But what we have, besides the pitchers and the bags of the flour and stuff like that, that describes it, We have the two millstones that were used to grind this. And those millstones, when they burnt the place, were found in the muck and the mud, obviously. Mm-hmm. And they were brought
in. Because they're stones, so they're not going to burn.
No, they're not going to burn. And they brought these, and I wasn't there at this point. And I don't know how they got it. I don't know how they got them up. I just don't know. But they got them in there. And where they are now in that little room is where they're going to stay.
They are not tiny.
They're not coming out. And it was kind of interesting because we're on Facebook and we're on the internet and so on like this. And I got a call from a girl from Kent State or someplace like that. She told me that she was doing her thesis, master's thesis on old mills. And I just kind of wondered why. But anyway, she said,
makes me wonder what her major was.
I have no idea. But she said that if she could come down there, she could tell me exactly where these stones came from. And I said, come on down.
How about it?
And she did. She came down and notified me one day and walked in there and stood right at the door and looked at them and said, I know exactly where these stones came from 20 miles northeast of Paris, France. And I said, you're kidding me. She said, no, it's the kind of stone that quarry produced for millstones, and that's it right there. So I began, what I tell everybody is, you know, once you get these, and the one of them is solid whole thing, and the other one is pieces that have been cut to put together to make it around. And those are all had to get here. You know, at that point in time, there was only a couple of ways to get here and come across in a ship.
A boat.
And it had to be used as ballast, I suppose, in the bottom of the ship. And then either to get here would be pretty tough. And there's only a couple places they could come into. It was Baltimore and New York. And if you came into New York, obviously you're going to have to go on the flatboat over the Erie Canal and then get a Cuyahoga and down. And that, you know, in those days you could do that because the Kilbuck in those days was navigable, you know, and not like it is today. Or the other way was to Baltimore, which means come across by train as far as it would go, and then wagon over the Appalachians to Pittsburgh and on a boat down to Marietta and up the Muskegon. I mean, it would have been a difficult thing to get here.
Right, and that would have been a tough wagon.
Correct.
I would not have wanted them horses.
No, I don't know what you're talking about. So, but anyway, they're there, and like you and I are saying, they're staying there. But there's pictures of that, and that is really an interesting room there. And, of course, Lillian Duncan was on our board and has passed away. She was one of the last ones of that family. Yeah, so that's an interesting thing. All right, then we leave there, and we go to the birds.
The birds.
The birds.
And it's not like the movie where they're...
Oh, no. No.
Yeah. We're locked in a phone booth. No, you walk down the aisles and you see all the birds.
Yeah, this is the Zucker Room. Clarence Zucker was a Berlin Elementary School teacher. And actually, this collection was at one time in the basement of Berlin Elementary.
Oh.
And they wanted to get rid of it. And so I was not there for this. They took it and they built these cabinets. And they're beautiful.
Huge glass cabinets.
And there's like four big long rows full of these
birds. And there's other creatures. And you made it.
Oh, yeah. There's all kinds of stuff. Any animals that are in there.
If it was in Holmes County or nearby, it's
Holmes
probably
County.
In that glass case.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you name it, it's in there. From hummingbirds, I mean, stuffed hummingbirds, from hummingbirds, including the little eggs.
They're just so tiny.
Yeah, all the way up to a bald eagle, and and that's, I guess, is the room that's fascinating to most people. And like I said, the conservative group that came through, that was the interesting one with me. I had
why didn't you bring us here first?
I had real fun doing that one. Then the eggs, you know, and I showed them, and I have pictures of Mr. Zucker up in a tree, clear up in the tree. And I was fortunate that about 2 years ago, I don't know, something like that, I had an Amish guy in here who told me he worked for Zucker when he was a kid. And his job was to be at the bottom of the tree as Zucker climbed these trees. And I show everybody a picture of this tree, this one tree. There's no branches on this tree. This guy had to climb that thing like a lumberjack. And, you know, others he could climb by branches, I suppose, but he gets up there. And this Amish guy said, my job was to be at the bottom of the tree. And he would go up to this nest, get an egg out, put it in the basket and lower it to me, and I was to put a small pullet chicken egg in the basket and take it back up and put it in the nest. Why? I don't know.
Trade for a trade.
Yeah, trade for it. Yeah, well, I don't. Yeah, this might be interesting. See, and and there is a story which I'm not going to talk anymore until we get down. Until you come down
here, you got to come and hear the story
of the chicken.
But
okay.
But you, if you saw Bob's face on this, you would know I need to hear this story.
The chicken. There's no question about it. Okay. I don't know. You want me to tell it or
no?
Not?
No. Okay. Make him wait. Anyway, make him come in.
Yeah. So he told me that's what he did, and then I have a case, and it's just shelf after shelf after shelf.
Oh, all there's identified, like 20 some shelves, I think, at least
of eggs.
And, by size, and the, yeah, they're all categorized. There's years on them.
Yeah,
very well.
And those conservatives guys didn't like that one too much. So.
You said, it's in record,
and he has a book with everything in it, and you know, so that's the general tour of the museum. But you could spend hours in there if you wanted to. It just depends on what you really like to do.
Okay.
But the big thing is you have to come.
You do,
and you know, we're open on 1 to 4 every Saturday and Sunday, and
you take donations.
Yeah, we don't charge or anything like that. We have a small box there for donations.
We're going to talk more with Bob Porter, the president of the Kibbuck Valley Museum, in our last segment on Focus Fridays. I'm Melissa Patrick for WKLM. One last time here with Kibbuck Valley Museum President Bob Porter. I'm Melissa Patrick for Focus Fridays. And we mentioned in the last segment that you just take donations for anybody that comes through if you feel so inclined. And you guys do a lot of grant work and donations through the Heritage Partnership.
I'll tell you, that has been the lifesaver. The Heritage Partnership, I think, was created a little bit by Sharon Strauss and Mark Boley and so on. And
10 years ago.
Yeah, got together and organized. You know, back up until that time, we lived on donations, which was really, I mean, a lot of times we didn't have money to pay bills. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you the truth. What happened at this point is they got together and decided that let's combine our mailing addresses. I think we used to send out maybe 100 things to Kibbuck people, whatever. And very generous. We have some very generous people that support us. But instead of now going out to 100, we now have one letter which you can just go down and check off who you want to give to.
And there's like 9 or 10 different.
Yeah, there's 9 or 10 different things. And I'm usually about the, you know, I don't quite beat the Victorian house. That's well known. But there's a lot of people who know me, and there's a lot of people who know the museum. So we usually wind up second in but that's the great thing about it, because instead of me sending out to 100 families or something like that, it goes out to a couple thousand or so. I don't know what the number is. And you just go down and check off what you want, you know, and I'm cheap. Go to mark me down and you know, and we've been able to do things that we could never do. We now have, and have had now, because of this program, metal. We have cameras in the thing that videotapes everybody. Alarm systems in the thing. We have to have that.
With all that stuff that you have, you've got to protect it.
I mean, we were able to put new carpeting down, and we redid our lighting to the new lighting. So it's just been, and we have some money in the bank. We never had that, you know? Like I said, when I first got on it, everybody's looking at each other, who was going to make the payment for the building, you know? That's, don't have to worry about that. So, you know, we've had to have the roof done, and it's just kind of nice that we have the money to do that stuff. For all of you out there who have donated, I give you tremendous thanks, because we wouldn't be able to operate. We wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah, I think
nobody gets any money here.
No, I
certainly don't get. I'm the chief bottle washer and janitor. No, I have some good friend, Dan Stavler. We have a lot of good guys down there that work down there, Lenny George, and we just, you know, it's Yeah, it's a good group of people, you know.
So volunteer.
But we could use more.
Yes. So if you want to join a good group of people.
Yeah. We have fun. Early American days. Yeah.
Yeah, you do programs. It's not just about working
at
the museum.
We're trying to do more. We've done the number, and now with Nigel back, we're always looking for a different one. And we're doing one on that we talked about originally here. We're partnering with the Victorian House and on this
Duncan.
The Duncan, yeah. So we'll do what we can do. Stay open.
And it's a lot easier to do more with help.
Oh, my gosh, yes. So if you're interested, and you don't have to be a scholar by any means.
No, I get asked questions at the Victorian House, things I don't know. I know quite a bit.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but there are somebody every time asks me something I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like they search for that question. They're like, she's not going to know this.
Yeah.
And I don't.
Yeah.
But I can always text or call or
take
their information and have them
whoever's in there,
back out. But it's a great way to meet people and share your local history.
Yeah. So that's it. You know what we're doing. We've got a beautiful little museum. We just need to get more people to come to it. And I'm not just crying about the fact we don't get them. We get them, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But we ought to have more than what we get.
The amazingness that you have in there, you should be busy every single weekend, all from April through October.
Right. And I get it. People come here from out of... Now, we do have our brochures out in different places. Because on Sunday, for example, there's not anything you can do in the East on Sunday.
So come to the West.
So, you know, come down to, you know. So we have those brochures out at the hotel and town and so on like that. And then, you know, to come down there and spend some time. But I understand when people come here on vacation, they're not really looking to go to a museum as such. They're looking
to
see all those. They would do good if they did. Yeah.
Especially
if they had kids.
It's so funny. When you live locally, you tend to miss a lot of the neat little gems, because you see it every day and it just doesn't click to go there.
You would not believe the people that when I'm down there, when they come through, and they're local people, and say that they have never been in here. They've talked about they've never been in here and could not believe what we have. So, yeah, I mean, that's simply the case. So if you have a group or anything like that, I don't care if it's a bridge club, I don't care what it is.
Get all your homeschool kids together
give
earn some history credit. Bob is a retired teacher. He counts for something.
Yeah, and that's my forte, is that
Bob is
history.
Full of knowledge. He's shared just a little bit of it here on today's episode of Focus Fridays, but there's so much more to learn.
Oh, I tell
from
you, I am so blessed. I have a beautiful wife and a great family, a bunch of good kids. We live on a farm here. I love Holmes County. I taught for 31 years, I still work for the school, and my probation department, I worked there for 11 years and under Judge Lee, and I just love this county, and anything that I, can push it on, I try to do, because what we have down there, you're not going to find them anywhere else.
A collection like that?
Yeah.
All together?
Yeah.
Good luck.
That's what I tell everybody.
Good luck.
Yeah.
And this is in your own backyard.
It is. And then I always tell them to go other places too, like, Johnson Hummerkauser Museum in Coshocton at Roscoe Village. Now, they have a beautiful Indian art collection. Their collection, though, is for the entire country.
Mm-hmm.
So they would have items in there from out west,
the
Sioux, Apache, where we are. Ours are all Holmes, Wayne, Coshocton County. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been to Reeves over east.
Mm.
It's a neat little museum over there.
Well, you need to get down there. So it's pretty cool.
Well, have we forgotten anything, Bob? Have
I
we left anything out? Any last words?
Doubt it. I have been dealing with you for I don't know how many years with Sheriff, and I will tell you what, you have done. You are a credit to Holmes County, even though you're not really a Holmes County girl. But then, I'm not really a Holmes County guy either as such. You just adopted him, and I have adopted him here. I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. And I just want this county to advance and and be as and be like it used to be as such. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. A good old the towns, just
let them flourish again.
Yeah. And I've had a lot of students that are now running places and doing this and doing that, and it's good in my mind. Holmes County is the best place to live.
And we got awesome places to visit while we do living here. Head to Kilbuck.
Head to Kilbuck.
Starting in April.
That's right. Or give me a call.
Or give Bob a call.
I'll set you up. And I don't mind going down any time and do it. If I can, you know. Saturday, Sunday, whatever. I'll go.
Monday, yeah. Tuesday.
Any day. Just give me a call.
Well, how do they reach you, Bob?
Well, my phone number is 330-674-0610. That's my home phone number. My cell phone is 330-763-0133.
So if you want that group tour, you want that tour, reach out to Bob and he'll get you taken care of.
Yeah, it could be 5, 10, whatever you want to do. I'll get you through there.
And it's definitely 100% worth it. I'm not just saying it because you're my
guest. No, I know, yeah.
It is 100% worth
it. I've had you down there. I know.
I've been down a couple times.
Yeah.
I didn't make it down last year.
That's all right.
I've been down multiple times.
Yeah.
You were an asset with the bicentennial planning.
You did everything. I didn't do anything.
Well, the museum. I got a lot of information from the museum. So it's definitely an asset to our county, the museum.
Well, I hope so. Yeah, and the future is...
Future's bright.
You just don't know what's going to happen down the
line. Future's bright, Bob.
Am I bright? Okay.
Well, thank you so much for joining
you.
With me today.
All righty. Thanks.
That was Bob Porter, the president of the Kilbuck Valley Museum. I'm Melissa Patrick for Focus Fridays here on WKLM. Focus Fridays has been brought to you by Hobbins Insurance, Home Siding, Rhodey's IGA, Millersburg Electric, Pomerine Hospital, MRV Siding, and Millersburg Tire. Focus Fridays happens each and every Friday in the 9 a.m. hour. If you happen to miss an episode of Focus Fridays, you can go to our website, WKLMFM.com, click on the Focus Fridays icon, and then choose the episode that you missed. In the next episode of Focus Fridays, we focus in on the superintendent for the Holmes County DD, Mary Ann Mader, all on your hometown radio 95.3 WKLM.